And welcome to Dad's on the Air for Tuesday, February the 10th, 2009. Australia is a nation in shock at the moment. With 130 people at least have died in fires in Victoria. Anything we say, as many other people have commented, is just frivolous, really. Anyway, we'll just read a little bit from some of the papers about this. It's just been an absolutely shocking thing. With 28 blazes still raging and fears the death toll of 130 could rise to at least 230 before the crisis is over, the Victorian bushfires last night became the worst natural disaster in Australian history. As refugees flooded down the mountain from King Lake and surrounding townships, relief workers headed the other way, taking desperately needed food, water and fuel to those who remain behind. A massive relief effort has been mounted to help the 5,000 survivors left homeless by the destruction of 750 dwellings. This is from the Daily Telegraph. The scope of the heartbreak was evident as emergency refugee camps at Alexandra and Whittlesea, where hundreds of the homeless have converged for help. And of course, every time you turn on a television, there's distressed people embracing them. On the front page yesterday, there was pictures of the bodies of four children being removed from a house. Just absolutely unbelievable, and the whole country is just completely taken aback by this. The Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, has said it just defies belief, and what also defies belief, of course, is that some of these fires were deliberately lit, and he's calling those arsonists mass murderers. From the Australian as well, the nation weeps as toll tops 130, an inquirer ordered hunt for arsonists begins. Authorities fear the number of deaths from the Black Saturday bushfires could spiral to 230 as John Brumby, as the Victorian Premier, called a royal commission into the devastating blazes and police hunted arsonists labelled mass murderers by Kevin Rudd. As the army was brought in to assist exhausted police in their search for more victims and help firefighters who continued to battle blazes threatening townships in northeast Victoria last night, federal and state leaders warned Australians to brace themselves for the official death toll of 132 rise. Just absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, I think the word arsonist goes about halfway in describing those people. Assholes is probably more accurate.
Well, anyway, don't forget you can listen to this program at www.dadsontheair.net. If you don't have time to listen to it all now, you can always listen to us and to many of our back shows, which are up there online. You can also listen to this live via live streaming at the 2GLF website. And I'd just like to introduce the people in the studio with us today. There's Phil York from Dads in Distress in Western Sydney.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Ian. Good morning, everyone.
And there's Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Yes, good morning, John. Good morning, everybody.
And my name's John Stapleton, so welcome to the show. It's going to be interesting. We've got one of the leading analysts or one of the leading academics who, looking at family law, child support, domestic violence, all that whole arena of issues which affect men so much. Dr. Stephen Baskerville is the author of Taken into Custody. He's written a number of books and written a huge number of articles exposing the damage that this is doing to our society and the origins of it, which is also really interesting. So we'll be talking to him fairly shortly. First up, there's a few news items.
Yeah, well, this weekend's Telegraph was full of relevant articles. On the front page, the headline was "Obesity Now Hits Babies." Kate Sikora wrote, "Babies as young as one are being diagnosed as obese, with a major hospital treating youngsters twice the size they should be. Doctors at the Children's Hospital at Westmead are admitting youngsters with severe weight-related issues such as sleep apnea and diabetes. The problem is so widespread that there is now a 12-month waiting period at the state's only child weight management clinic at Westmead. Obesity costs the nation's $26 billion a year. One in four children are overweight or obese. Children are developing adult conditions including liver and heart disease, diabetes and sleep apnea. Doctors advise 2 hours or less of television per day and 1 hour of exercise." So it seems like diet is a major part of the problem. Also in last Saturday's Telegraph, on pages 4 and 5, is a basic shafting of fathers. Paul Kent writes, they cuddle their terriers and pose for photos to last a lifetime, which unfortunately those photos must do. They are the children murdered by their fathers in a tragic, wasteful act of spite against their mothers. They are the weapons of guilt. Yet another child, it is alleged, has died at the hands of her father. Arthur Freeman's motives for allegedly throwing his daughter Darcy off Melbourne's Westgate Bridge 9 days ago are unclear. The first question is why. The next question is how could they? I mean, this is an issue that we covered last week. But what the point I'm trying to make here is they've gone out of their way. They've shown pictures of all of the children practically who have been murdered by their fathers in the last 10 years. And no mention of the number of children murdered by their mothers. And if you look at the statistics, 34% of children murdered by their parent are murdered by their fathers. 76%. Does that work out? You know, so 76% and 24%. 24 by fathers, 76%. So 3/4 of the murders committed of young children are committed by their mothers. So this article, which basically focuses on men's, they've devoted a whole page to tragic photos of some beautiful young children who were murdered by their fathers. Of course, to print the pictures of all of the children who were murdered by their mothers, they would require another whole newspaper. They wouldn't have got away with it in two mere pages. So that is just basically another example of extreme feminist bias when it comes to these tragic statistics. And finally, on the back page, this is a bit of light relief. Rebecca Wilson has written, "Equal pay, a bit rich." Rebecca writes, "Nobody dares to say it. Blokes are too scared. Women feel like they would be letting the side down. Political correctness, sexual equality, and feminism all prevent many commentators from stating the bleeding obvious, but enough is enough. Watching Serena Williams run around for 59 minutes in the Australian Open final last weekend was embarrassing, pitiful, and pathetic. Her humiliation of Dinara Safina was a terrible advertisement for a sport that has apparently disappeared up its own backside. Remarkably, Serena thanked her opponent for putting on a great display for women's tennis. The only thing Safina and Williams actually did was convince most of us that females are so far behind the men that it is only the participants themselves who believe that their sport deserves equal billing. Williams earned $2.25 million at the Australian Open." And when you compare that with the men's events, which were thrilling, which were dynamic, which went on for hours and hours, I agree with Rebecca. There really is no comparison. The whole thing is a travesty.
Phil. Thank you. From one of our many listeners, we were sent this during the week, and it's an ad for a child sexual assault counsellor. It's a permanent job share position, 13 hours a week, all sounds really good. And it starts off under Section 31.2 of the Anti-Discrimination Act. "To be a woman is a genuine occupational requirement for this position. The essential criteria includes commitment to feminist philosophy and principles." It also, they're asking for a demonstrated ability to work in a multidisciplinary team. Understanding the child protection legislation, etc. But, you know, it just seems to me that it's all, again, it's all sexist, it's all one-sided,
Absolutely. Imagine if we advertised for a chauvinist to fill a position.
Yes, commitment to chauvinistic philosophy and principles.
Yes, must have a degree in chauvinism. The whole thing is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
It is, mate. And, you know, it just goes to show how endemic this whole situation is. You know, it starts at uni, it follows through, and it just continues and continues and continues. And
well, there's no men's studies courses at university. There's plenty of women's studies, and they're well-funded, and men are encouraged to attend them to become aware of women's issues and study women, but no studying of men, and of course men are behind in all of the government funding for health initiatives,
etc. Right. Exactly right, mate. And, you know, just further on to that, you know, there's also a media release which Tony Miller from Dads in Distress has released yesterday. And it's in regards to men's health and to the funding and et cetera. And if I may just read this, it says, just before Christmas, there was a media release put out by Crisis Support Services by Men's Line that went fairly unnoticed. The headline ran, "Dad's suicide risk skyrockets when separated from children." In the media release, it was stated that Men's Line Australia has uncovered men living without their children are five times more likely to have attempted suicide as compared to fathers who are living with their children. Highlighted in an analysis of the 60,000 callers who ring Men's Line Australia each year, fathers living alone are twice as likely to have experienced a serious mental health concern. Dr. Nick Foster of Men's Line Australia explains many separated fathers are devastated by the inability to see or live with their children. And it just goes on. And what Tony is trying to say here is, you know, this, our country here is at epidemic levels of suicide. It's tragic. It's happening every day. It's affecting the whole community. It affects our kids. It affects our extended families. Dads in Distress, as an organisation funded by the federal government, will close its doors in June if no further funding is forthcoming. Our current funding ends in June. And, you know, this is after reports of just how tragic this separation is, especially on men.
And so women's groups aren't suffering the same kind of loss of funding, I believe, under the Rudd Labor government. It's only men's groups that are copping it, basically.
Yeah, that's my understanding as well. Dads in Distress is just one of the men's groups who do not know whether any funding will be forthcoming in July and have been told that, you know, it's certainly not a definite. So that's where we're at.
Shocking. We'll be back after this track.
Scrub the floor. She's 54. I ain't gonna am. They say sing while you sleep, and I just get bored.
And we honour that. We have the honour today of having Dr. Stephen Baskerville, who's the author of Taken Into Custody, The War Against Fathers, Marriage and the Family, on the show. You there, Stephen?
I am here.
Great. Thank you so much for coming back onto Dad's on the Air. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Look, one thing I'd really like our listeners to walk away from today and from this interview is to understand exactly how we got to where we are, the origins of, we all know, and we talk about it every week, how appalling the family court system is, both here and around the world, this ditto for the child support system, child welfare, and so on. But how... what were the origins of all of this?
Well, the origins are in several different places. One of them is in the welfare state. Most of the repressive features of the family court system and the bureaucracies that support them have their origins in the welfare state among low-income families. These things are started out in low-income communities, and they gradually spread out into the middle class as the state acquires more and more power over families, first over poor families and then over middle-class families. There's an ideological element in this also of organized feminism that's clearly driving this. There's been an alliance that has been created between the feminists and the bar associations, judicial interests. The bar associations and the courts, the judiciary has become very bureaucratic in every Western industrialized democracy. In Europe, in North America, I'm sure they're in Australia, the courts are really essentially extensions of the bureaucracy. The psychotherapy industry has contributed this to a large extent, also driven by feminism, and it's allied the forensic psychotherapy industry, that is to say the psychotherapists that are dependent upon the courts for their and the bureaucracies for their income.
These are all family report writers
that I see contributing to this.
Right. And why, and I think it's happened there as well as here, we've had a decade, and you've had 8 years of George Bush, for instance, we've had a decade of John Howard, a conservative government, which hasn't addressed these issues. In fact, the bureaucracy and the spread of the welfare state spread much further into the middle class under the conservatives. Why is that happening?
Well, we see the growth in power of the state all through the Western world. And it does happen in radical left-wing governments, seem to do it faster and drive it, but it happens even under conservative administrations such as the Bush administration and John Howard there in Australia. It's much of this is bureaucratic. The growth of these government sectors takes place often without the knowledge beyond the control of the elected officials. And there's not much they can do about it even if they wanted to, I think, in many cases. It's bureaucratic government that creates work for itself and builds and increases its power and its reach. And this is a crisis. Alexis de Tocqueville warned about this in his book, Democracy in America, over 150 years ago. He predicted this. So it's something we need to take a direct aim at, the growth of bureaucratic government, the ideologically driven bureaucratic government, and its control in particular over families.
Certainly here, there was a big push for family law reform, for instance, here in Australia, and it looked for a moment in history like it would actually succeed, that we would actually get shared parenting as the norm after separation, all of these things. And it was the bureaucracy that blocked a lot of those reforms. Is that true elsewhere?
Oh, very much so. The bureaucracies are very closely connected with the bar associations and the private psychotherapists and the lawyers, and they're all very strongly connected with the feminists and other left-wing ideologies. So they're the ones that will block it, and they're going to continue to block it.
And is it as simple as the bureaucracy needs a welfare state? It needs a large body of single mothers, for instance, in order to justify its own existence?
Very much so. Single parenthood is the basis of most of the social problems in the Western world. And social single motherhood, single parenthood families are the gift that keeps on giving when it comes to this government power. It creates all kinds of social problems, crime, substance abuse, truancy, educational failure. All of these things are connected with single parent homes, and all of these things drive the power, the increasing power of the state.
So why don't the politicians address this? It seems so obvious to everybody else. Why don't they address this?
Well, there's a huge disconnect right now between what people are demanding and what the politicians are addressing. I don't think we are seeing... I think the public, part of it is the public is not demanding. There's not been a conscious realization among people of how much of this is a public issue, a public policy issue. This hits millions and millions of families throughout the Western world, tens of millions of families, and yet nobody's made it an issue. Most politicians nowadays in most democracies increasingly are lawyers. They're connected to the bar associations. They know that increasing these laws that they've created on no-fault divorce and child custody, this creates business for themselves. It creates business for their fellow lawyers and bar associations and their clients in the patronage systems that operate throughout the Western world. So it's not likely the politicians are going to address this until the media and the public force them to.
But surely most of the politicians are men. I mean, most of the people who make up the bureaucracies are men, and surely they can see the impact that the erosion of male rights is having on men, on families, that is resulting in all these. I mean, why can't these people stand up and say that this is not right? Why can't they see that this is simply not fair, what's been happening?
Well, I'm sure they can see that it's not fair, but unfortunately, they've engaged in a Faustian bargain, most of these lawyers. And yes, it isn't. They are destroying males and fathers and all through the world, but they are also increasing their own power as a result of this. This is an increase. They may be men, but they are increasing their own power as a result.
But how can they be... How can they be increasing their power if, I mean, all it takes is for their wife to ring up the police and say, he hit me, and suddenly he doesn't own his house anymore, he's not entitled to go inside it, he can't see his children, and basically all of his human rights as a parent and as a father are stripped away over a single allegation, which can be an out-and-out lie, doesn't have to be proven anywhere. How can men, surely the men involved in these organizations, the bureaucrats, the politicians, surely they could see that this could possibly happen to them? I mean, if they're looking after their own power, isn't that their power, their personal power, just being stripped away from them?
Well, I don't really think so, no. They're getting huge earnings from the divorce machinery. They make enormous amounts of money. They increase their power, and also their power is very much, again, bureaucratic power. This is the very nature of bureaucratic power that no single individual can do much about it. If you don't play along with it, you can be punished by it. So I don't think so. Here in the United States, it's also true that some attorneys and judges and people in the divorce who work for the judiciary often get very favorable treatment in the courts. And it's sometimes they can turn the table on their wives and take away their children and subject them to it. So men that are judicially connected, at least here in the U.S., often do quite well out of the divorce machinery, and the genders are reversed.
So it really doesn't impact on them, and they see they can treat other people's children as they would never treat their own.
Yeah, precisely.
So in America, did you see the same phenomenon there as you saw here, that in fact the welfare state spread further into the middle classes, that any push for family law reform was ignored?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We have this very strong... Here in the U.S., single-parent homes are increasing faster in the middle class than anywhere else. It's the main area of growth for single-parent homes.
Do you have statistics on that? Or give us a rough measure?
Yes, I believe there are. I don't have them at my fingertips. But, yes, I think that's undisputed now.
Right. And why? What is the background to that? Why is that happening?
Oh, it's very simple, because they've transformed the welfare state into a massive subsidy on single-parent homes. So middle-class families are bound to take advantage of it. Middle-class women, that's where the money is. So things like, for example, child support enforcement here. Child support enforcement was originally justified and rationalized as a way of forcing low-income fathers to, as they said, take responsibility for the children that they had fired. And so they created a massive federalized child support enforcement system. Well, that effectively is now operating as a subsidy on middle-class divorce. It's created for low-income families. Now there's very few low-income families on it. It's become a huge subsidy, a way of paying middle-class women to divorce. So effectively, the federal government says, if you divorce your husband, you will get this massive income redistribution that you don't have to account for. It's all tax-free to you. So it's effectively, we're subsidizing single-parent homes in the middle class.
It's certainly the same thing is happening here in this suburb where we're talking. Statistically, an average family with two children is financially better off breaking up. Surely that's insane public policy.
Oh, it's madness. It's complete madness. We have a government funded, family destruction machine. That's exactly right.
And why do so few people, you're one of the few academics in the world that have spoken up about this. Why so few?
Well, academics know which side their bed is buttered on. The academic world is controlled by the feminists, for the most part, and it's not good for your career to do anything critical of the feminists. I lost more than one job as a result of the divorce industry and speaking out against it. So it's there's nothing. There are no rewards in it whatsoever. The feminists have ways of punishing their critics, and the academic world is a place where they have the most powerful tools for punishing their critics.
Yes, there was that classic case in America. I think it was Harvard University, was it, where the guy was hounded down for daring to suggest that men and women think differently, basically, or have different mental capacities.
Oh, yes. Yes, Lawrence Summers, you're thinking of, and he's by far nowhere near the worst. There are men that are academics that have fared far worse than he has.
So it's totally a closed shop, and all the preaching of diversity and tolerance and thinking outside the square, all of it is total nonsense.
Oh, absolutely.
We're talking with Dr. Stephen Baskerville. He's the author of Taken into Custody, The War Against Fathers, Marriage and the Family. We'll be back in a moment.
In distress, meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're
back with Dads
on the Air. And we're talking with Dr. Stephen Baskerville. He's the author of Taken into Custody, The War Against Fathers, Marriage and the Family. And also, if you want to see more about Stephen Baskerville, he has his own website where a lot of his articles and material is up there, as well as a new blog. Stephen, welcome back. Now,
thank you.
You're there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good. We were talking about the origins of this whole war against fathers and why the whole present system is so bad. Can you talk about where the actual beginnings of it? Did it begin early last century, you think?
Well, yes. If you trace it back, you could trace it back to the early 20th century, at least, or late 19th century, with the rise of the social work industry, There's the feminist movement of the early 20th century. The demand for the vote actually encompassed many other things, like the it included the demands for divorce liberalization and so forth. So many of these things contributed to it, and then of course the rise of the welfare state in the 30s and afterwards.
And were people even back then predicting what would happen, or?
That's a good question. I think some people were, yes. I mean, people like G.K. Chesterton and Hilaire Belloc in Britain were had an idea about what was coming. You can find bits of it. I'm not sure anyone really understood precisely what it was going to lead to. But Chesterton was warning against liberalized divorce and the breakup of the family. He claimed that it would not only destabilize society, but that it would result in a loss of freedom. And he was right. He turned out to be right about that.
And one of the major shifts across time, as you write, has been that it turns into a punitive system where the welfare system isn't there to distribute money. It's to raise money, usually from separated dads. Can you talk about that?
Well, yes, we're seeing that now, actually, here in the United States, at least, where the child support system, I believe, is probably the most repressive anywhere in the world. I don't think it's quite reached these dimensions in Britain yet. But the child support system has become, instead of a way of, it's part of the welfare system, and it's a part of the welfare system that, rather than distributing money, is collecting money. They're demanding reimbursement now for the welfare payments. So they're criminalizing fathers by demanding child support. That most of these fathers have done nothing to incur, an obligation they've done nothing to incur, and money that they do not owe. But it is nevertheless demanding that they pay exorbitant amounts of money in so-called child support for the pleasure of having their children confiscated.
And
fathers in this country are going to prison in large numbers. There are no public records. There are no published, I've been looking for the published figures on the number of men in this country in jail for child support violation. There's no government, no government publishes any information on it. I've read research from others who have tried to find out this information. They cannot find it either. There's nothing in the Bureau of Justice statistics about it. The Bureau of Justice statistics is supposed to publish information about all incarcerations in America. They do not have anything on child support enforcement. So it's really a very frightening and, I think, totalitarian situation that we're developing here.
That's astonishing, and there's certainly been talk here, and it certainly has happened to some people where they have been sent to jail as a result of all this process. But in America, it's lock them up, basically, isn't it? How far behind do you have to be before you get thrown in jail?
It varies. It's very uneven. There's no regularity to it or predictability about it. It depends on where you live and who decides to... who gets a bee in his bonnet or her bonnet and decides to start rounding up fathers.
Right. And it's all, it's amazing, isn't it? Yes, we get a very similar phenomenon here where they're blocking people leaving the country now if you owe child support, for instance, which I would have thought was a pretty basic right. The freedom of travel is being taken away from fathers. The same sort of thing is happening there, isn't it? They were talking here about taking away people's licenses, which means you couldn't even earn a quid if you wanted to.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch what you're saying.
Well, can you talk about the dimensions of it? I mean, people take over there, people are being jailed in large numbers, but also they lose their licenses and those sorts of things. Just the impacts.
Well, the impact is huge. I mean, people, you know, they're confiscating people's children in massive numbers under the guise of divorce. They're basically bribing the mothers. They're saying, if you divorce, we can take his children, his home, his savings, his future earnings. We can take everything he has. He can even be forced to pay attorneys that he hasn't hired. And we can put him in jail for any of these things. And there's no trial. There's no jury. There's not even a formal charge in most cases. The judge simply jails you without trial. If you don't pay your wife, or you don't pay your attorney, or you don't pay her attorney, or you don't pay the child support people, or you don't pay somebody who wants to put their hand into your bank account, into your pocket, and they will jail you summarily without trial, and that's the end of it. You just stay there until somebody pays it.
And you've written that this is the consequence of all this is that marriage is dropping rapidly, that many men realize it's the quickest way to go to jail is to get married.
Well, that's exactly right, yes. There's a huge drop in marriage. It's hardly surprising that there's basically a kind of marriage strike going on.
And what do you think the... final consequences of that will be?
Well, the consequence is that no society has ever existed without marriage. No civilized society has ever existed without marriage. Two-parent married families. It's never happened before, and it cannot happen now. It cannot survive. We're seeing the loss of not only social stability. We're seeing the loss of civic freedom. The traditional constitutional protections that we've enjoyed in the English-speaking world for hundreds of years are being simply trampled underfoot as if they don't exist. Every article in the American Bill of Rights is being violated every day in this country on a huge scale. People are being incarcerated without trial. Habeas corpus is ignored. The right to bear arms is simply trampled on. The right to a speedy and open trial is abrogated. The due process of law has become a joke. This is what's happening in the family courts in America, and it's spreading elsewhere. And it's happening, I know, in Britain, and it's certainly happening in Canada. It may be worse in Canada than it is here.
And this is why in these courts, truth seems to be such a complete irrelevancy. I mean, you see these desperate fathers carting around all these law books, desperately trying to learn a bit of law and to conduct their own cases, and it's all pointless, isn't it? Because at the end of the day, the mother always wins.
Well, that's exactly right. Yes, that's exactly the family courts are a travesty. They're a joke. Nobody pretends that there's anything like due process of law. You can even, in America, you can even be prosecuted for a new crime they've created called practicing law without a license. And this doesn't require that you hang out a sign and say you're giving legal advice without credentials. Just advising a friend who's going to court can be practicing law without a license. It amounts to practicing citizenship without a license. And this is the logical conclusion of the tyranny of the lawyers, because the lawyers have become effectively professional citizens, and they're going to run the country for us. So it's really a police state that the divorce industry is creating. And it's a police state that, like most police states, that operates through fear. You asked earlier why no one is opposing this. And the reason is because everyone is frightened. Everyone is terrified of the lawyers. They're terrified of the judges. They're terrified of the feminists. Nobody will speak out about this. Churches are paralyzed. They will not speak out about this because they're terrified of losing female parishioners. We have groups here that advertise themselves as being pro-family, but they won't speak out about it either because they're terrified of being attacked as the friends of pedophiles and wife beaters and deadbeat dads. The lawyers are terrified that they'll be suspended, that the conscientious lawyers and judges will be removed from the bench or suspended. Bureaucrats who speak out against this will lose their jobs. Academics will lose their jobs. Journalists will lose their jobs. Nobody investigates this because they're all terrified.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? It's just mind-blowing. Do you think this will get worse under President Obama?
I think there's no doubt that it will get worse under President Obama. President Obama essentially owes his election and his position to the very interests that have created this, the bar associations, the trial lawyers, the judicial interests, the social work industry, the psychotherapy groups, the feminist organizations, the other leftist lobbying groups. These are the very people. He comes out of the Chicago community organizing school, which is very much runs the social work industries in this country. So these bureaucratic interests are and they're all expecting large amounts of money from the so-called economic stimulus. There's going to be more money for child support enforcement, more money for so-called domestic violence and child abuse programs, which create the very problems that they're supposed to be solving.
We're talking with Dr. Stephen Baskerville. He's the author of Taken into Custody, The War Against Fathers, Marriage and the Family. We'll be back in a moment.
Don't you love her badly? Wanna be her dad? so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1-300-853-437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
And we're talking with Dr. Stephen Baskerville, the author of Taken Into Custody. He also has his own website. And you've got a new blog now. Stephen, you there?
Yes, I do. I do have a blog, stephenbaskerville.com, I believe you can find it.
Right. Can you talk about why you set that up? And this is only fairly new. This is since you wrote the book, isn't it, that you've set this up?
That's right. That's right. And I wanted to publicize the book, and I want to publicize some articles I've written about it, which are synopses of the book. I have an article in the current issue of Touchstone Magazine. And if your listeners go to Touchstone Magazine and click on the current issue, they'll find that my article is one of the few that's online. And it will give them a synopsis of what is in the book.
Right. We'll just read a few paragraphs here from that article just to give our listeners a sample of what they can expect.
Yeah, and it starts off, the decline of the family has now reached critical and truly dangerous proportions. Family breakdown touches virtually every family and every American. It is not only the major source of social instability in the Western world today, but also seriously threatens civic freedom and constitutional government. And needless to say, this is not only happening in the US, but it's also in America. It has headings such as the child support rackets, abuse of children, etc., etc. So, you know, it's there's a hell of a lot here.
Right. So, yes, can you just talk a bit more about the material that is up on the site and what people can expect?
Well, if they look at my website, stephenbaskerville.net, they can see the articles that I've published over the years. I've published quite a few scholarly articles and articles in current affairs journals, respectable magazines and newspapers and periodicals like Touchstone Magazine and Salisbury Review in Britain, and some others as well. So these are not fringe publications at all. These are mainstream public affairs journals, and as I say, including scholarly journals in which I've documented the things that I'm saying here, and they are further documented in the book. None of the articles or books that I've written have been criticized, have been shown to have any flaws in them as far as factual flaws in them. So none of these have been refuted by the divorce industries or the feminists or anyone like that. So it seems to me that the judges and lawyers should be answering these charges. They should either be one way or another. They should either be proving that what I'm saying is false, or they should be answering and accounting for what they're doing and the crimes that are being committed in the family courts throughout the Western world.
But, of course, they just simply ignore their critics, don't they? They're just mosquitoes that they can afford to ignore.
Oh, that's right. Or they vilify them. I go into this in the Touchstone article. They vilify them as deadbeat dads or pedophiles or wife beaters. These are the three most common accusations that are leveled against fathers without any evidence, without any trial or any conviction. Yet, as soon as they start flying the words like pedophile and sex pervert and wife beater and deadbeat dad, of course, any opposition melts away, and nobody will wants to be seen as defending pedophiles or deadbeat dads. And I go into this in the article in some detail, why this is. So this answer, again, answers your earlier question. Why do we hear nothing about this? The feminists just throw these words around like pedophile and deadbeat dad, and then nobody wants to be associated with that, so they run away.
And, you know, certainly here you're regarded as a Neanderthal or an unreconstructed male, as some sort of primitive, you know, caveman, if you dare to criticise or dare to even suggest there might be something wrong with all of these edifices, the family court and the child support agency and all the rest of it. Is it the same there?
That's exactly right, yes. Yes, again, they operate by fear, and by raising these red flags, nobody wants to be associated. Nobody wants to defend. So it's fear, it's terror that allows this to continue. And as a result of this, the divorce rate continues to escalate. More and more children are made fatherless. More and more fathers end up in prison without trial, for the most part. And the whole system just feeds upon itself and exacerbates itself.
Will it ultimately collapse?
Well, I think it has to collapse. It cannot continue like this. This is just perverting and poisoning the entire judiciary of every country that I've examined, every country in the English-speaking world, at least. It's poisoning the whole system of government. It's destroying government ethics. It's destroying social stability. And again, it's destroying constitutional freedoms, the freedoms that go back to the, you know, the Bill of Rights, the Petition of Rights, the Magna Carta.
So basically the bedrock of our civilization, the foundations, are being eroded in front of our noses as we sit here and document it happening. Is there anything that you can see that we can do about this? I know you're writing articles. We come out here every week and we interview people like you. We're trying to shed light on this situation. They've got people dressing up in Batman suits, posing at Buckingham Palace, etc. I mean, is any of this having any effect? Do you see anything positive coming of all this in the future?
Well, I think it's up to largely the media. I think a big responsibility falls on them. So you're definitely to be commended for what you're doing here. And the more the media, the politicians are not going to do anything until they feel the heat from the public, and that won't happen until the media begin to investigate this and to report on this. We need a discussion about this. You started doing this in Australia some time ago. I know under the Howard government there was a discussion about shared parenting. But it has to go much further. There's a big discussion going on here about same-sex marriage, which is really just the tip of the iceberg. It's only a small part of the issue. But until these things are broadened out and become major discussions on the nature of the family, divorce, custody, marriage, and above all, I think child custody is the heart of the issue. Until that dialogue takes place, none of this is going to be questioned and none of it's going to be brought under control.
I'm just going to read a paragraph from this Touchstone article just to give listeners a sense of the whole thing. Most Americans would be deeply shocked if they knew what goes on today under the name of divorce. Indeed, many are devastated to discover that they can be forced into divorce by procedures entirely beyond their control. Divorce licenses unprecedented government intrusion into family life, including the power to sunder families, seize children, loot family wealth, and incarcerate parents without trial. Comprised of family courts and vast federally funded social service bureaucracies that wield what amount to police powers, the divorce machinery has become the most predatory and repressive sector of government ever created in the United States and is today's greatest threat to constitutional freedom. That's you write very well, Stephen, you really do. Where can we go from here, as Ian was asking? Where do we take this?
I'm sorry?
Where do we go from here? What do you think we can do from here?
Well, again, we need to agitate. People can't take this lying down. We need to take to the streets. We need every opportunity in the media. Anyone who's taken through this ringer in any country needs to start make a fuss about it. I mean, you make a fuss in the local media, above all, and get the national media to take this on, because this is again, until we put pressure on the media, until the media puts pressure on the politicians, nothing I think is going to happen. And we need to, the public needs to be aware that this is not, when they're taken into these courts, this is not some private matter that can be hushed up and kept behind closed doors. It's a public issue. It's a terrible abuse of power that is taking place by these lawyers, judges, bureaucratic operatives, psychotherapists, feminist organizations. This massive machine is what it is, of people who are feeding off the they're causing the destruction of families in order that they can feed off it. We need to express outrage. We need to be willing to change the subject on every opportunity. Bring this up anytime someone discusses fatherhood or marriage or the family. We need to agitate and to be militant about it.
And, of course, what is most sickening is that they all claim to be acting in the best interests of children.
Exactly.
So we're talking with Dr. Stephen Baskerville. He's the author of Taken Into Custody, The War Against Fathers. We'll be back in a moment. All right.
Agony etched into every ring. A paperwork piled from
grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress, 1-300-853-437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Talking with Dr. Stephen Baskerville. He's the author of Taken Into Custody, The War Against Fathers, Marriage and the Family. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Now, we'll wind up on this segment. How has the book been received, and can you give us an idea of what it's all about, basically?
Well, the book's been very well received. It's got 55 five-star reviews on Amazon last time I looked, and it's selling well. And I get an overwhelming response to it. I get a very enthusiastic response from a number of radio hosts like you and mainstream radio hosts here in the U.S. So I get a very enthusiastic response. Unfortunately, among the public policy wonks, they seem determined to ignore it. There have been a number of books out recently on families and marriage that treat these issues from a much more superficial standpoint, and they seem to be much more widely quoted among the think tanks and the politicians and the members of Congress and so forth. So they're determined to avoid these issues. There's no question that the politicians are studiously ignoring these issues. You hear a lot of cliches about deadbeat dads and father, responsible fatherhood and the need to end fatherlessness by having more psychotherapy classes and so forth. This is more than just superficial. It's very irresponsible, I believe. It's very, I think it's dishonest, frankly, what is going on. But so there is a huge, I mean, that's clearly struck a nerve among people in the, not only here in the U.S., but I know in Britain and other countries, the book has been selling very well. The people who are reading the book and others like it need to agitate more. We just need to make a bigger fuss when they take away our children and when they come for us with the handcuffs.
But people are, you know, essentially powerless in this, aren't they? You know, if you speak out in any profession, you're ridiculed. Separated dads are often just a subject of ridicule. They're just dismissed as...
Well, that's very true, unfortunately. I realize that. And I'm fortunate in some ways that I have a position, a platform at a college where I'm able to speak out on these things. But many people can't do this. Yes, they will. They can be punished. People who speak out can be punished in their children. They can be, you know, you speak out, criticize the judge takes away your children or reduces the time with your children. And this is what happens. Right? And it's a frightening situation. So people need to stand together and speak together as one voice.
Yes, we had one person here who was a member of one of the father's groups, and every time he spoke out on this show, his child support, coincidentally, just happened to be increased. So fairly shortly, he couldn't afford to come in here anymore.
I'm not surprised about that.
It's amazingly brutal. And I think anyone who looks at these systems regard them as completely corrupt. The family report writers in Australia are notoriously dishonest, yet they're treated with great reverence in the court, and yet everyone knows that it's little more than fantasy what they write. Why?
That's right. That's exactly right. It is a scary situation because you have a huge, government-funded propaganda machine that is supporting this. It's not just a misconception. There is active government propaganda that feeds this, that vilifies, you know, governments vilifying their own population, their own citizens. And the citizens have no right to reply, no right to speak in their own defense.
And what I find appalling is that many of the reporters just copy this propaganda straight into the news pages, and they don't even bother to look at the other side for one millisecond. So we get these deadbeat dad stories here, and nobody quotes a father's group. Nobody bothers to look at the other side. They just replicate the agency's propaganda. Same is happening there, no doubt.
It is very shocking. It is quite amazing what is going on.
So we'll just wind up.
You're to be commended for shows like this because it's very important that you get the word out and that people hear the truth. The same way that we did in Radio for Europe and the BBC during the Cold War, during the years of communism, and during the years of Nazism. And this is very comparable to what went on then.
We've been talking with Dr. Stephen Baskerville. He's the author of Taken Into Custody, The War Against Fathers, Marriage and the Family. And look, if you just Google the name Stephen Baskerville, you'll be able to see his website and his blog and be able to access a lot of articles and a lot of information. There's no excuse for ignorance, even if it's very difficult to change the world as it now is. Thank you so much for coming on to Dad's on the Air.
It's my pleasure, and God bless you for what you're doing.
No, thank you very much. We'll be back.
Oppressors of women, or are women the oppressors of men? A woman wakes up in the morning in a house built by men. She starts the water to boil on a stove built by men, and sits at a chair and table put there by men to read a newspaper written in part by women, but printed and delivered by men. She nibbles some toast made from grains grown and harvested by men. Whoops! Time to take a shower. She turns a faucet handle installed by a man, and lo and behold, out comes hot water, delivered by a vastly complicated water system built and maintained by men. She drives to work in a car built by men, on roads built by men, powered by petroleum, drilled and refined and delivered by men. She arrives at an office building built by men, walks to her desk, fires up her computer, and glances out her window at a city built by men, full of potential customers for her service business. Out of the corner of her eye, a table in the conference room that seems awkwardly out of place snags her attention. She strokes her earlobe. At that moment, the janitor scoots by in the hallway. "Bob, oh Bob, could you please move that table further into the corner? You're such a dear." She pins him with a delectable and utterly phony smile. Bob, oblivious to the cheapness of the words and falseness of the smile, thrilled to get any attention at all from such an attractive person, pitches right in, and as he lugs one corner of the heavy table across the carpet, she exhales a comfortable sigh. Her day has begun. She will spend the next 8 to 10 hours telling other people what to do. That's her understanding of work. This creature, who has no idea where things come from, how they are made, and has not the slightest knowledge about how the world works, has been put in charge of it. Because there is really nothing else of any specific value she could be doing. If she lived in a world built by women, she would be sitting in a tent, watching her breath in front of her face, stitching animal hides. But she lives in a world built almost entirely by men. And amazingly, she has not the slightest appreciation or gratitude for that fact. She never even stops to think about it. Never stops to think that if all the things men make and do were magically removed, right now she would be plodding through a muddy swamp looking for red-winged blackbird eggs. She thinks the world is made out of proper grammar and attractive clothing and polite conversation and correct opinions, instead of rivets and concrete and copper and petroleum. From the day she picked up her first teaspoon, she has been learning how to manipulate the things men provide, as if they were put in front of her by God or Mother Nature. She has no idea what men actually do. Yet, according to her and the media she consumes, men are assholes. How long do you think this is going to last? When I think of the men, the lumberjacks and truck drivers and paper mill workers and printers and delivery men, the men who have to get up early every morning and do very hard jobs so that Ellen Goodman and Maureen Dowd and other feminist blowhards can sit in their climate-controlled offices shitting out editorials about what assholes men are. When I think of those women walking on the backs of all those men, I want to start bombing things. Let's bomb them all the way back to the unheated tent and the muddy swamp and see what they complain about then. Maybe they'll start writing editorials about how women should start doing real work, not just office work. Here are the facts. 19 out of 20 people who die on the job are men. 4 out of 5 suicides are men. 85% of the homeless are men. Women live 7 years longer than men. 65% of America's wealth is owned by women. says Forbes magazine. Men are not regarded as equal parents to their children. Men are drafted in time of war, and women are not. Given these facts, how could anyone with half a brain possibly believe that men are the oppressors of women? Now hear this. Men are now, and always have been, the protectors and providers for women. The protectors and providers for women.
I don't know where I went wrong.
And now, on the line, we have Sue Price.
From the Men's Rights Agency. Hi, Sue.
Good morning, John.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. How's everybody there?
Oh, we're surviving a lot better than they are in Victoria. My God, what a mess.
It's pretty appalling, isn't it? We used to live, we used to have a farm up around that way, up at a place called Bonnie Doon, which, of course, is in the middle of some of the areas like Flowerdale and those ones. And it was always a risk during the summer for fires, and there was always a problem with people driving along the road, dropping their cigarettes out and things like that. But, you know, a little bit more care is obviously needed to avoid these sort of issues.
Mm. So the death toll has hit 130 and is expected to rise to over 200, which is
worse. Yeah, it's pretty tragic, isn't it? But I saw on one of the email lists this morning that they were talking about the fires, and someone was immediately referring to it as risk-taking behaviour on behalf of men, in a derogatory way, and I thought, well, this really isn't necessary. But John, if we didn't have men who were prepared to put their lives on the line, we wouldn't have survived World War One, Two, any other wars, or you know, we wouldn't have had firefighters, we wouldn't have police officers. You know, what do they expect men to do? You know, as far as I'm concerned, they should be praised, they should be applauded, you know, for all the work they do. What I'm saying is not negative to any of the many women who now contribute to the fire services, the volunteer fire services. They do a wonderful job. But the men have always done a wonderful job, and we should be thanking them.
And it's fairly obvious that they're overwhelmingly male, all these...
They are. And you see the stories, you hear the stories. There was a man who was terribly badly burnt, sort of skin off, hanging off him. He was clutching his daughter, and he passed his daughter to someone saying, you know, rescue my daughter, look after my daughter. He'd lost his wife, another child, I think, and yet he'd managed to survive long enough to get her out of the danger and into one of the centres. Heaven knows what happened to him. Hopefully he's in hospital and he's being cared for.
Unbelievable.
But it's the heroics, isn't it? You know, they're always the last to leave. The man will be the one who stays behind to fight the fire whilst hopefully getting the wife and the children to safety. And that's what tends to happen.
And it makes you sick that, you know, the popular culture now, it's just fashionable to deride men and to dismiss them.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But it's worse than that. I mean, it's worse than that because children, I mean, young boys grow up seeing this on television, seeing that the male role model, men going out there risking their lives, doing wonderful, valiant, courageous work, are not recognised for it.
And decrying them for it and saying, you know, it's foolish, it's risk-taking. Well, heaven's sake, what are they supposed to do? You know, I'd rather live in a world where men are you know, happy or happy to engage in that sort of behaviour, because, you know, if it weren't for their bravery, we wouldn't be surviving.
And I think we'll just move. It's a slightly related topic. Dads on the Air has just put out a press release because there's been so many stories since the girl was thrown off the bridge, which was an appalling story. We won't rehash that, but we've just put out a press release. It's headlined, "Kids Are Safer With Dads," and the Australian Institute of Criminology has reviewed the most recent child homicide statistics from its National Homicide Monitoring Program. The new data shows that during 2006-07, 11 child homicides were perpetrated by a mother, while five perpetrators were fathers,
and five perpetrated by the mother's partner, the boyfriend.
Right. But, importantly, no child victims were killed by a complete stranger during this period.
Look, for years now, we've had a mix of statistics coming out that are they are cloaked in secrecy. You know, they talk about men or in the family, or they talk about males. They don't designate which male in the relationship to the child. And they've done that for years, but this one is just blatant incompetence in the first place, that they got the numbers wrong to begin with. They couldn't even get the right number of mothers and the right number of men who had committed homicide. But now, of course, thanks to Greg Andreessen's valuable work, he's exposed it for what it is, which is an absolute farce and misinformation, which is, in my mind, is absolutely criminal, the information that they're putting out.
Well, they're telling lies, aren't they? Let's face it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is lies, and that, unfortunately, has been what has run the agenda for the last few years, and the denigration of men. That it's exactly these sort of the old statistics that were being used, and it'll take a lot to get to get these new statistics out into the forums to have them accepted, because they don't want to accept it. They just don't want to accept it. It's well known that mothers are far greater risk to children than their biological fathers. It's like there's a new commercial being put out, I heard yesterday, about child sexual abuse, and they're talking about fathers being the sexual abusers of their children. Well, figures, as far as I know, refer to less than 1% of child sexual abuse being committed by a biological father. And yet they're highlighting this person as being the mythical sexual abuser, whilst they're ignoring the people who really do, which are the newly introduced men into the household, or other siblings. A third of sexual abuse is committed by other siblings. These figures are important, but they can't afford to hide them.
Greg Andreessen, who's our researcher here at Dads on the Air, says in this press release, stories are appearing regularly in the media inferring that the safety of children is put at risk when the courts award sole custody to fathers or when shared custody is given to both parents.
Yep.
These figures show that in terms of child homicides, this simply isn't the case. Children are 3 times safer when they are with their fathers than they are with other custodians.
Absolutely, because fathers are the children's protectors. They always have been, they always will be. The same relates, as I mentioned just before, in other categories like neglect and abuse. The mother is always the greater in greater numbers as being a perpetrator, but we don't see that information being published. All we see is the odd story, like the poor child who went off over the bridge, and that father for what he did. That even in that case, they didn't go back less than 12 months and say that a woman strapped an 18-month-old baby to herself and jumped.
Well, also, there was that article in last Saturday's Telegraph where they basically had a 2-page spread with photographs of all of the children over the last 10 years who'd been killed by their fathers, and a really gut-wrenching article saying how terrible and how tragic it is and what's the answer and what can these poor women do. And there was absolutely no mention of any of the children who'd been murdered by their mothers. There were no... They would have had to have probably printed another whole paper to get all of the photos in of the children who'd been murdered by their mothers.
Yeah, absolutely. One of our fathers, whose child was murdered in about 1996, I think it was, 97, he was supposed to take over residency of the child, and the mother gassed herself and the child the night before. That was really heartbreaking. He was on the ABC radio when Diana Bryant was on. And they really did cut him off. They didn't give him an opportunity to explain what had happened. But it was just at least in that instance, they did show that it's not just fathers killing children. It can also be mothers killing children. And they do so in greater numbers. So why aren't we seeing those statistics out in the public?
And Diana Bryant is, of course, the Chief Justice of the Family Court.
Who, some say, lost the papers.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And out of her car, which apparently no one had broken into the car, and that was very sus. Yeah, she just
a bit of carelessness, I think, might be described as.
Well, yeah. Well, incompetence. Yeah, lots of words could describe that.
Oh well. Look, all right.
We've been talking overall about the whole development of the family law, domestic violence, child support, the whole arena, the whole anti-father bureaucracy. What do you think is happening in Australia? Are things getting better or worse?
I think, well, they did get slightly better under the coalition when they did change the law somewhat, and they did change child support somewhat. They didn't go far enough, but it was somewhat better. But now, with Labor in, we're seeing a newly arisen women's groups and the funding for domestic violence against women programs. We're following in the tracks of the Violence Against Women Act in America, which Joe Biden, the new vice president, is pushing over there. And, if we follow that track, it's going to get much worse. We were talking at our meeting the other night about what we need to be doing, and we need to have some program put forward where we do the research, like Greg has started with this, the homicide statistics. We need to pull all these figures apart and present it in properly researched documentary form so that we can send it out to every politician and can send it out to the media. Surely that way we must get through the myths that are being quoted and cited all the time.
Lies. They're lies. No,
well, they are lies.
They're lies.
You're quite right.
Let's call it spade a spade. They're liars telling lies.
Yeah, well, that's what it is.
Defaming fathers as we sit here trying to defend ourselves.
Yeah, well, it's really bad news, but I think we need to do that. We need to get, you know, either if we can persuade Greg to do it, or I can do some of it, Greg can do some of it, maybe we can get a few people together to investigate certain parts of it and produce some documents.
And, of course,
analyse what's been said, what's happened in the past, and maybe we can just tear their program and their agenda apart.
But, of course, if we were a women's group, we'd have full government funding for it, and we'd have, you know, we'd have assistance. And
well, unfortunately, we're not. So
no.
We have to make the best of what we have, which I have to say is our brains and our capacity to look at things logically and without a great deal of bias. So that's what I cling to.
Well, of course, no one's pointing out that both mothers and fathers do kill their kids in custody disputes, and one of the reasons is just the insane levels of stress that people are put under. They're demeaned, they're robbed of all their assets and income, and they're just put through astonishing levels of stress, and they reach a point where they believe that both themselves and their children are better off dead.
Well, it comes back to a situation, doesn't it, John? I agree with what you're saying. It comes back to the situation of does a government really have a right to say to a perfectly good father or mother that you will not be able to see your children during these hours? Do they have that right? I don't believe they do.
Our press release, we'll just close on this. Our press release closes with comments from Phil York, Dads in Distress Coordinator for Western Sydney, who says, "Whenever a child is killed, it is a tragic, devastating, incomprehensible event. The real tragedy is that our health and social services aren't finding these parents and helping them before it's too late." We'll be back next week.